This is Bronwyn Schwagert, licensed therapist and author at the Angry at the Right Things podcast. Instead of controlling our anger, we'll be looking at what causes it in the first place so we can rectify what's dysfunctional in our lives and in the world. Here we go. Hello, Angry at the Right Things listeners. I am excited to be back making a podcast in July with my bestie, Katie.
Hello again.
So I woke up. Katie doesn't have any idea what I want to say. And, you know, half the time I don't really know what I want to say. But I woke up this morning actually thinking, pondering about all the things I have learned even since we have last spoken, Katie and I have, and kind of the pieces just coming together, making connections between things. And I actually have a lot to say about all that that I'm really excited to share. I'm going to call it, it's just a silly term, but making meadows.
Making meadows.
Making meadows.
All right. I'm intrigued.
Yes. So I'm a big mountains mama. Love the mountains. Was just up at Lake Tahoe the other week. And, you know, meadows are kind of these really cool spaces. They're usually pretty flat. There's almost always some kind of little stream running through them. They're clearings between forests. They're green. They're not high alpine places with, you know, rocky outcroppings. They're like these little clearings, these little safe, restful, peaceful places.
Okay.
And I think that it's a really good metaphor for what we all need for ourselves in our lives all the time. And when I say that, I mean not meditation. I'm not a big meditation fan. Sorry, everyone whose feelings are really hurt right now by hearing that. I'm not. I don't like meditation, and I'll tell you why. Meditation, at least the Eastern type of meditation that I'm familiar with, is basically about clearing your mind. Now, I have tried that, and I've never had luck or found it remotely satisfying in any way. I don't believe that humans need to clear their minds. I think humans need to pause and reflect and ponder and engage in what we call introspection or contemplation, which is not meditation. It's not clearing your mind.
Right, right. It's kind of calmly observing what's going on.
Yes, it's kind of, well, I want to quote one of a quote I really like. It's been a life favorite, fan favorite. I think it's Socrates, and he said that the unexamined life is not worth living.
Yeah.
And I used to really, I've always liked that quote, and I've always seen it more like, you know, you should really sit down and think what you want to do and what you want to get out of your life and kind of plan it. That's how I've historically viewed that quote.
Right, right.
But now it's really changing for me. Now I see it as, I would rephrase it, the unreflected life is not worth living. And so I'll tell you a little bit why I'm really thinking about this these days. I feel like we humans, if we just go through the motions of life without pausing to reflect, I feel like we, and when I say reflect, I think about reflecting on our feelings, our thoughts, our conscience, our intuition. If we don't do that, we will stay out of awareness, what people call consciousness. I like to call it awareness. Mm-hmm. And we won't be able to realign our true selves what our conscience, what our gut, what our feelings are telling us to be with our actual selves, our lived selves. Does that make sense?
I think so.
So I find with my clients that, well, and with all humans, we override our feelings, our gut, our instincts, our conscience much of the time. And I think that's a natural human tendency. But if we don't pause to reflect, we're just going to keep doing it. And so our ideal selves are going to be very distinct from our actual selves. If we don't pause to reflect, to consider, to contemplate, to have introspection, I believe we will never be able to self-correct. We will never be able to learn from our own lived experience. And we will have no idea why we have the triggers we do. And therefore, we will be subject to those triggers.
That makes sense.
And you and I spoke before we started this recording a little bit about how your husband, Steve, kind of had a wake up years and years ago about his own behavior. And he did his own self-reflection, right? His right. own self-correction. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how much that's impacted you and your marriage.
Yes.
And his was while he was on a run. And he was seeing himself in a character from The Lord of the Rings, right?
Right.
Do you want to share a little bit more about that? Or?
Oh, I just, yeah, he was seeing himself, like seeing everything through a lens darkly, I guess you could say, and from a very self involved point of view. And he just kind of had this epiphany about that was just not the way he wanted to live his life anymore. And he really did shift after that.
So he saw himself in a character in The Lord of the Rings, and yeah. It wasn't a good reflection.
Right.
It was a reflection.
Yeah.
And he was able to say, oh my God, I'm like that guy.
Yeah.
I'm doing that thing.
Yes.
And it needs to stop. Mm-hmm. And he apologized. And he really cleaned up his act.
Yeah, he really changed after that.
And that was all came from a time of reflection. It wasn't intentional. He was out on a run. And you know, when we exercise, especially being outside, that is a time for a lot of us to have epiphanies. And he kind of had an epiphany of his own.
He did. Yeah.
And he made good on it.
He really did. Yeah.
Okay. So I read something recently. What? Oh, it was the book, Britt Frank's book that you suggested I read.
Yeah, Science of Stuck.
The Science of Stuck. And she had this comment in there and I wrote it down. So what I'm all saying right now is our ideal self, the self that our conscience, our gut, our feelings want us to be, becomes out of alignment with our actual self if we don't pause and reflect and introspect. And when that happens, our subconscious is registering that discrepancy. And we will, as Britt Frank said in her book, be at war with ourselves.
Ugh. Yeah.
Does that register with you? Yeah,
I think it does. Yeah.
And so I want to just give an example. How many months ago, maybe 8 months ago, when Edie was my daughter, who's 19, was still living here, we got in a big fight. And I wasn't, you know, the best. And I retreated back up to my room. And when I calmed down a few hours later, I reflected on the fight. And it wasn't easy, but I did see my own contribution to it. And what I realized during that time of introspection is that when I am with another human being and it's silent, as I was with her that day, I am completely triggered. I am completely triggered by silence in the presence of another person.
Oh, wow.
And so I tried to break through that silence by asking her questions, which is what I do and I've historically always done with people, and it's made me a really good therapist over the years. But my daughter is one of those very rare people who hates questions. And you know what? I'm a good question asker too.
Right.
But, she didn't answer my questions when it was silent between us. And so I got really triggered because now I'm feeling rejected. And I blew up and I yelled at her. And, I had to back off and come back to my bedroom and cool down. But when I took that time to reflect, I saw, oh my God, this is not unique to this situation. I have always had this trigger with the silence in the presence of other people. And it makes me feel really rejected by that person. And that's why I break the silence. That's why I ask those questions. And then when I tried with her, she rejected me again. And those are all my triggers. And I'm responsible for them, not her. I'm responsible for my feelings of rejection because they're mine. They're my feelings. So all of that, it wasn't easy to think back and look at my own behavior. And, here I am. I'm 52. I'm a therapist, for God's sake. You think I'd know myself better than that. But I still have to pause and make a meadow for myself and reflect.
Ah, so that's where the meadow comes in. The meadow is the place of, of reflection.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot.
So when we choose to ponder, to reflect on our lives, our behaviors, our feelings, our gut, our conscience, it's painful, but we're choosing that. We're choosing that. And it takes willingness. It takes a commitment. It takes humility. A lot of people do not choose that. They actually run the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And it's what we would call denial. And we hear the term denial used a lot in like the recovery community, people who are addicts. But denial is much more broad than just people who have active or passive addictions. Denial is every human being has to fight denial, and we have to fight it chronically throughout our lives. And that is just wanting to keep our eyes shut. Choosing to not know, choosing to pretend, choosing to stay in the dark. That's what denial is. And we all have that tendency to do that. And it's like a layer. Denial is like a layer of insulation that protects us from pain and painful feelings. And so it functions very well for us. But that same layer, that same insulation also keeps us from seeing reality in the present. And so it's like pain, physical pain. No one likes physical pain, but people who have like very damaged nerve endings, for example, with diabetes in their feet, well, they don't feel the pain. They don't have any sensory mechanism feedback for their feet telling them, hey, don't step so hard. Don't, you just banged your toe into a door. They don't have that. So pain has a function. It warns us. It keeps us safe. Right. Well, denial is like that insulation from pain altogether. There's no safety. There's no feedback mechanism. So we're always in danger. Mm. We're always unsafe when we choose to stay blind. It blinds us. It literally blinds us. So I'm going to give you a couple examples, and it's hard to hear, but it's what I see in my practice as a therapist all the time. Denial insulates the adult parent who was sexually abused from seeing her own children at risk when in the presence of that same abuser.
Mm.
Yes, it does.
Right. That explains the prevalence of that.
There's scenario. A very high prevalence yeah. of that scenario.
Yeah.
That adult, let's say mother, mm-hmm. is in her own denial about it ever having happened to her. And it's serving as an insulation from her pain, mm-hmm. but it is keeping her from seeing what is happening now. And it's now putting her children in jeopardy.
Right.
So that's an example. Denial is choosing to believe that this person that we're talking to right now isn't manipulating and deceiving me. Because in the past, we don't want to admit that people have been manipulative and deceitful. So now, because I have that denial layer, mm-hmm. it blankets everything. So now anyone else, a fly on the wall could say, oh my God, Bronwyn, that person is a shark mm-hmm. and a snake and you're being manipulated and deceived. I can't see it.
Right.
Because I'm blanketed. My eyes are closed. Mm-hmm. So denial is, it makes us vulnerable. It makes other people vulnerable. And you may ask, why do we choose to remain in denial? Why are we choosing to stay blind? And I think I finally reached a conclusion for why that is.
Okay.
Because if we're not blind, if our eyes are open, we will end up being alone. Mm. And I have seen so, so many people are deathly afraid of being alone. They would rather be in the presence of someone that they really, if they're honest with themselves, do not respect at all than to be alone. Because if they're alone, they're alone with their thoughts,
right?
With their feelings, with their conscience. And there's no layer of insulation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. That's the scariest thing of all.
Right? It's the scariest thing of all. And I hear this again all the time. I have clients who tell me how they stay up really late at night and it's harming them. But they just can't get off their screen to go to sleep. They'll say things like, I don't know why that is. I don't know why I'm afraid of falling asleep. I said, you're not afraid to fall asleep. You're afraid of that time between.
Afraid of being alone with their thoughts.
Alone with your thoughts before you fall asleep. Mm-hmm. That's what you're avoiding.
Yeah.
That is what you're avoiding.
Right.
That's a vulnerable period of time.
It is.
There's no defense for that. There's no defenses.
Everybody has handheld screens
mm-hmm.
that they can take to bed with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to just avoid that.
Well, I think it's also why people don't want to sleep alone.
Yeah.
They're alone with their thoughts. They just need a warm body there to distract them. They don't necessarily need to love that person
no.
or respect them. It's a warm body. It serves as a distraction.
Right. That makes sense.
What are you thinking right now? It's a lot.
Yeah. No, I hadn't really thought about that. The being alone component of it.
So here's the thing. So whether it's people on their screens, whether it's binge watching Netflix, shopping, cleaning, porn, gaming, eating,
exercise.
I mean, yeah,
everything.
Yeah. What we're distracting from is being alone with our thoughts. And again, thoughts mean feelings.
Right.
And conscience and intuition. So if we were to carve out times, making meadows, if we were to carve out times to intentionally reflect on our lives and do the hard work of opening our eyes to ourselves, our choices, our behaviors, examining ourselves, we wouldn't have to run from anything. We would be free.
Right.
We would be free. We wouldn't have to have any compulsions or distractions.
What do you think about that? Do you think people should have like regularly scheduled time that they choose to contemplate? Do you think that works? Do you think it has to be more organic than that?
I mean, I like your husband, Steve, have had many times where I've been out running and I'm just like, oh my God, I'll have like a huge epiphany about mm-hmm. myself. And those are not scheduled. So, and I've heard that with other people too, where right. they get their best ideas while they're out on a walk or a run. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't think we have to schedule them. But we have to be open to them, and we can know where those are most likely to happen in our lives.
Right.
Like I said, being outside.
Yes.
Being away from all those distractions.
Yes.
But again, so there's some intentionality there. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can force them.
No.
You know, just lying in our beds, allowing ourselves to lie in our beds before we fall asleep and allowing those thoughts to come up and to mm-hmm. ponder them. That's a choice right there.
You're right.
However, I think the thing is this, you know, so I liken anger to a fire. A lot of people are scared to death of anger because it's like a fire that's going to burn down the house. It's going to destroy. But remember, if a fire is contained in a fireplace, mm-hmm. it is a wonderful source of light and heat for the whole home, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing about fire is it purifies.
Right.
And again, living in our day and time in the world, we don't appreciate all these things about fire anymore. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was in grad school, the first time I learned that the number one cause of maternal and infant death worldwide throughout history is and has been and is still today in many countries, when the umbilical cord is cut, there's an infection that happens that can kill the mother and the child, or either or.
Oh, wow.
And that is from a non-sterile instrument.
Right.
And if people don't know that, mm-hmm. it's going to happen. And they're going to go, oh, well, we lost another mother, another child. I don't know.
Right.
What sterilizes it is a fire.
Right.
People have a fire. Most people in the world have access to some kind of, you know, way to sterilize that knife. Mm-hmm. So we need all these things. And when I think of introspection and contemplation, a lot of people run from it because they're like, oh my God, it's going to devour me. Mm-hmm. It is going to destroy me. When I look at my actual lived behavior, I'm going to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. But what if it's just like a contained fire where it doesn't destroy, it doesn't burn down, it just refines. Mm-hmm. So it's humility, but not humiliation.
Right.
It's a big difference.
Yeah.
So that is reflection number one. There's a second type of reflection I want to talk about. And this is another thing that's really come up to me lately in my mind as a therapist doing my work. So we can reflect on our own, like I'm suggesting that we all do.
Right.
But we also need to be aware that humans find their own reflection in everything all the time. Mm-hmm. So we use or objectify other people as mirrors, mm-hmm. right?
That makes sense.
We do. Mm-hmm. And we look at our parents, our teachers, our boss, our friends, our partners, the audience, if we're on a stage, social media, our scale, the actual mirror.
Yeah.
Our paycheck, our house, our car, they're all mirrors. Mm-hmm. They all are reflections of our image to us. They all reflect mm-hmm. us, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. And if we're not aware, it is going to be the way
right.
we look at those things, right? So that's what we call the narcissistic way. But again, we're all in the narcissistic spectrum if we're not aware. What we don't keep in mind is that, especially these relational human reflections that we see in other people, that as even though they can feel so good, like Katie, when you and I talk and you tell me how much you appreciate me, it's life affirming. It feels amazing. It feels fantastic. But what I need to remember is that reflection that I'm getting from you, mm-hmm. as good as it feels, it's very much a biased reflection because you're you.
Right.
And there's no human that's a pure, unblemished mirror for me.
Right.
There's no human
right.
who can do that I can really trust, like consistently.
Right.
The only human I can trust is me. Yeah. So if we aren't aware of this, we become enslaved to chasing our reflections of approval from others, from our paychecks, from the size of our house, the neighborhood we live in, the audience, the social media, the scale. Yet we need to see it's just a mist. It's just a vapor. It's so arbitrary. yet it can make or break us if we're not aware of it. We give all of our power away to others who are not sincere mirrors.
Oh, that's so true. Giving all our power away to others.
We become powerless and we become enslaved to the reflections that we seek.
Right.
Yes. So the only unblemished reflection is our own. And it is absolutely necessary. We need to see ourselves to open our eyes and to give ourselves the unconditional love and approval that we long for. We need to say to ourselves, I see you and I love what I see. It is good. I also see the bad and the ugly, and yet I still accept you, all of you. I am committed to you and I will not abandon you when you make mistakes or when you fail. With me, you're allowed to be fully human. With me, you're allowed to have the full spectrum of feelings and needs and limits because I value all of those things. They are so important. You are so important to me. I see all of you and I love all of you. And this, my dear friend, is the ultimate form of power, good power.
Right.
Because there's bad power.
Right.
This is good power. This sets us free from the rat race. It sets us free to be absolutely fine with whatever others reflect to us. Mm-hmm. It sets us free from using other people as objects, as mirrors. But instead, we get to enjoy their three-dimensionality. It sets us free from constantly applying metrics to ourselves in order to reach some sort of arrival state. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you an example again with me. So just maybe a week and a half ago, I had a theory about reptiles. I was really excited about.
That's not random.
Yeah. And I was sharing it with Steve, and he's not you. And I knew that going into it, but he was the best I had at hand. And granted, I didn't get to spend a lot of time really elaborating on it, but it was kind of like the beginnings of this working theory, like a working theory, right? So I just kind of shared some stuff with him, and the look on his face was like, eh. And then he goes to the kitchen, he comes back, and this is, he basically goes, yeah, your theory, it's kind of like my dad's theories.
Oh.
Yeah, you know what that means, right?
Not a compliment.
Not a compliment. I mean, we all know that Steve's dad is the guy we all avoid at all family gatherings because that's all he does is espouse his random, ridiculous theories, and no one wants to hear them, and no one really respects them. So that's what he compares it to.
Oh.
And I got mad.
Yeah.
But here's the difference between the new Bronwyn,
mm-hmm.
who now only respects her own reflection, and the old
yeah.
Bronwyn. So the new Bronwyn said, F you, which is what the old Bronwyn would have said. And then she says to Steve, you know, that's just really pathetic that you can't appreciate the nuance and that you're too dense to hear it. Bye. And he left for the day. And that's how we left it. And I was fine leaving it like that.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
I love that.
The old Bronwyn would have said, F you, but she would have persisted with a desperate need to prove yeah. how true and valuable this theory is to him.
Right.
She would not have been able to just say bye.
She would have needed validation.
She would have been desperate for that recognition.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't have
yeah.
like given up until
Bronwyn
she got it.
Doesn't give up her power.
I didn't yeah. feel the need
nope.
to. I had my own power.
No, I yeah. think you're right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about people that I've met whose confidence I admire.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I meet someone who doesn't necessarily seem like who you would imagine should have a lot of confidence
mm.
in what they do or who mm. they are, but they do for some reason,
yeah,
for whatever reason. And I think it's because they don't give up their power. They don't allow what other people think to interfere
yeah.
in what they do, how they choose to live their life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. They don't doubt themselves. I mean, I'm sure they do, but
yeah.
they don't let their doubt stop them.
They don't betray themselves.
Yeah.
They don't second guess themselves.
No.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see myself right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that superhero stance they say you should stand in to feel powerful. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Oh, it's just like this thing where you sort of stand with your legs sort of a little wide apart and your shoulders pulled back like
okay.
a superhero kind of
either. Yeah.
Just standing in that posture is supposed to like kind of give you a feeling of confidence.
Yeah.
And oh shoot, I lost my train of thought. But I'm just seeing myself like that, I think. And I'm just seeing in my head like a banner that says, I will not give up my power to you. Or anyone else,
mm-hmm.
but not like in an evil way, like you said, not evil power, but like my power to like
yeah.
love myself and be my own best advocate, right?
Yes.
Like if you're not, then you can't utilize anything worth having anyways, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, it frees you up. So Katie, the days where I share my amazing thoughts and theories with you and you can't reflect the value to me because you're having a day of your own, or maybe you're genuinely like, Bronwyn, I don't really jive with what you're saying right now. I'm free to let you be who you really are and be authentic and honest. I'm free. I don't need to prove
right.
myself to you. And so I'm free to accept you with sometimes, you know, reflecting to me what feels good and sometimes not.
Right.
So there's this freedom now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I like that. I'm thinking again about that character in The Incredibles, the woman that designs the superhero costumes. Like, she does not suffer fools, and she does not let anybody take her power away. Huh. Right? Like, she's like a totally powerful, she's this little diminutive person.
Yeah.
But she says what she thinks, and nobody gets in her way.
Like, wow.
She's kind of awesome.
And then you don't have to, with, I don't know her name. What is her name?
I want to say it's Edna.
Yes. I think it is Edna.
Yeah.
We'll call her Edna. With someone like an Edna, you know what you see is what you get. So it gives you like a peace.
Yeah.
To be around someone like that. Cause you're not guessing with an Edna.
She's
not
manipulating you.
Yeah.
She's not hiding anything. She's just like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is what I think. Deal with it.
There's no sneakiness with an Edna. There's no you reading between the lines with an Edna. There's like this freedom to just enjoy Edna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we all need to be a little more like Edna.
Yeah. And so going back to what I was saying, when, if I'm just looking to you to be a mirror for me, that's not fair to you either, because there's other dimensions of you.
Right.
We're all three-dimensional. And it makes me think about when I was in college, I dated a guy for a little over a year. And this is a hard reflection, honestly, even to this day, even though it's been, you know, over 30 years since then. But I feel like I really used him, you know, as an object of sorts.
Right.
Because he loved me. And I felt very adored by him.
Right. His adoration made you feel valuable.
He made me feel valuable. He made me feel special. He made me feel important and loved and lovable. And I used him. Mm-hmm. I objectified him because, Katie, to be honest, that's all I loved about him. The other dimensions of him, his humor, we did not share the same humor. And humor to me is huge. I'm racially Jewish, and I have a very funny Jewish father from the East Coast. Like, humor is so important to me. And this boyfriend and I, like, we had such a different sense of humor.
Like,
we
had never be in love with someone that didn't like make you laugh.
No. And he didn't think I was funny. Like, he didn't like my, he thought my humor, he was from Mexico originally. So he had all kinds of cultural hangups about me. Like, I'm really ballsy. I'm really like, he thought I was way too flirty with other people, even though I'm like that with men and women. That's just me.
Right.
And I don't know how much of that was from, he was from rural Mexico, like a cowboy kind of area. He came from a ranch. So part of it's Mexico, part of it's, you know, he was a caballero. He was
machismo.
Yeah. So very, very, very traditional in those ways. He liked country music. Sorry, country music fans, but I don't like country music. And music is also so important to me. And he didn't like my music. And I really, really tried. And so I didn't really love him. I really didn't love him.
You loved that he loved you.
That is all I loved about him. And I stayed with him. You know, if I had been honest about that, I mean, I remember having a dream after only dating him for a few months. And I had this weird dream that I was married to a big black dog. Yeah.
Weird.
And I knew what it meant. I knew
what did it mean?
It meant, it gave me a feeling of security.
Oh.
And that's all it gave me.
Oh, wow.
And he was very good looking. And like, women would come up to me and be like, your boyfriend is so cute. He was guapo, right? But that's all. That's all I loved about him is how he reflected me to me.
It was a very surface relationship.
It was, I objectified him. And again, that was narcissism. That's what narcissism is we use people as objects. And I absolutely did that with him. And I wanted that security, and I probably stayed about a year longer with him than I should have, which was, you know, only stayed with him for like a year and a few months. So yeah. I stayed with him,
right.
And he wanted to marry me. And when I broke up with him, he cried. He's this big, guapo caballero, and he's crying when I'm breaking up. And wow. Then I like want to kill myself, and it was horrible. And so, yes, I greatly resent, or not resent, I greatly regret that I did that, that I gave into my narcissism, that I used him as an object, and I broke his heart and wasted a lot of his time.
Right. Yeah, you were young.
Well, there's plenty of people my age still doing this.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true.
But, and the new Bronwyn has not been new for that long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, you never told me that story
before. I never told you about the married to a dog dream.
No.
So, now that my husband is freed to disagree or to not think my theories are amazing, and he's going to hear it from me. I'm going to say, hey, F you.
Yeah.
You're too dense, and that's pathetic. You know, it doesn't mean I'm going to like it, but he has freedom to walk away. And then you know what he did? He texted me like a few hours later, mm-hmm. and he goes, hey, I'm really sorry. That was lame. I didn't give your theory the credit that it deserved. I'm like, you're cool.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to play a game.
No, I think that's a big part of like mature adult relationships is coming to that place where you're like, whether it's friendships or marriages or family, like we need to agree to disagree about this and just walk away from it. Like we're not going to, we're not always going to be on the same page with other people. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yes. So going back to the quote from Britt Frank, we're at war with ourselves. Oh. Yeah, I want to hear your reflections on that.
Yeah, I relate to that so much. Mm. Like I say, the me I want to be, the ideal me, and then the me that I really am, and the shame that I feel about the me that I really am. And so that's sort of what I think about when I hear being at war with yourself. Like,
okay, so you're kind of making a distinction between the ideal and the real, but you're not in denial of the real.
No,
you're aware.
I'm aware of
you're bringing your awareness to the real.
So it's more about like being at peace with what is.
Yeah.
And then not, the other component is the not giving away the power to others. And then I think I'm more okay with the real if I do that. If I'm giving away my power, then I'm not happy with myself.
Yeah. So what would it be like for you to be your own reflection for yourself and to say, like I shared earlier, to say, to have you out here, Katie, looking at you and say to the Katie she sees, I love all of you, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
You're okay to be human with me. You're okay to have limits and failures and mistakes. I accept all of you. I'm not going to reject you. I'm not going to abandon you.
Yeah.
I love your humanity. I love you as you are.
Yeah, I'm just getting to that like place in my head, like just now, which feels like, gosh, I wish I'd done that earlier in my life, but I'm glad it's happening now.
Mm. What's helping you get there? Like what are the barriers that have kept you from arriving at this place now?
I think feeling responsible for everyone else's feelings.
Okay. Yeah.
Have kept me from getting there for years, all my adult life. And I'm so done with that. I'm so over it. I'm so ready to not be responsible for that anymore.
So when I was up at Lake Tahoe over 4th of July, you and I talked on the phone and you asked me what I suggested for not feeling, for feeling more free to ask for help. And I said, well, Katie, because you had shared with me that your aunt had told you when your sister was born, she felt really sad for you, that your mom gave, like, she basically neglected you emotionally. And your aunt saw it. And that is very significant that she would say that and that she would even remember it in order to tell you that, right? And you were three, four?
Three and a half.
Okay. And so I think I reflected from what I know as a therapist is that makes sense. If mom looked way too burdened with the new baby, that she couldn't give you the time of day suddenly, that you learned to not ask for help. You learned to not burden mom any more than she already was. And I also brought up, it made sense to me now why you even didn't want to have children for a period of time.
Yeah, I didn't. It's
Because
true.
I think what you witnessed as a little girl was children are way too burdensome. That's what little Katie learned, right? And she learned all of that, just witnessing that taught you that it's your job to be responsible for other people's feelings. It's on Katie to not burn in mom. It's not mom's job to attune to Katie. Actually, it's Katie's job to attune to mom's feelings. And so that's the template, young in life, that we all carry into every single relationship for the rest of our lives if we're not aware of it, if we don't bring our awareness, if we don't reflect on it. And that template won't go away on its own. And so to break through that, we have to unlearn. And so you're now at this juncture where you're saying, I need to unlearn that I'm responsible for everyone else's feelings because I'm learning that I have my feelings and I'm only responsible for my feelings. I see.
Yeah, and I don't. It's so hard for me to ask for help. It's so hard.
Because you're going to be a burden.
I guess I don't, or I don't want I don't want people to worry about me. I don't want,
Your mom gets really worried. Like,
yes.
even if you say you get depressed in the afternoons.
Yeah, I don't want people to, when I say I don't want people to worry about me, I'm pretty much talking about my mother.
Well, that's where we learn it. That's where we make that relational
Don't
template.
want her to worry about me, and I don't want, with my husband, it's more like I don't, I think he just thinks I'm being negative, you know, like he's a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of person. So I don't really often tell him when I'm struggling. With friends, I just don't want to be a downer.
Okay,
So,
but from what I know about your mom, the little
yeah.
you've shared,
Yeah.
if as an adult you say, hey, you know, I get really depressed in the afternoons, and you know that's like a thing that other people do too.
Yeah.
And I remember you shared that her response was like, no, you just need to drink more water. No. Right. So what that tells me, her response tells me that she is feeling responsible for your feelings. She cannot, she has no boundaries. She can't go, oh, wow, you feel depressed in the afternoons? That's interesting. She can't do that.
No.
She has to unfeel those feelings for you. She is going, they immediately become her responsibility. Yes. So there's no boundary there. So when you say it's still hard for me to ask for help, I don't want to bother other people. I don't want to make them worried. I'm thinking I wouldn't worry if you asked me for help, but your mom would. Your
Yes.
mom would, there's no boundary. So you're projecting that onto everyone. So what we have to unlearn is like, okay, yeah, with my mom, she is going to do that. But there are some people who are safe to share my feelings with.
Right.
Not everyone, but some people I can say, hey, I'm struggling. And they'll go, oh, tell me about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's another thing I need to, I need to work on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause some people like to help other people, Katie.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. It's just, it's a habit I've had for as long as I can. I don't even remember like doing it as a young person, mm-hmm. like with my friends as a teenager. I don't remember talking about problems or my feelings or, I mean, we talked, but I don't ever remember talking about those things.
Yeah.
Ever. I didn't learn that.
No.
I don't know how people do learn it in a healthy way. I don't know how that's modeled or.
That's all. They learn it. Yeah. You know, I just, who was I speaking to? I was being interviewed on another podcast the other day. And it's a podcast for women going through a divorce. It's called The D Shift.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's put on by a woman named Marty. And she is a divorce coach. And it's really cool. She's really cool. Yeah. So she interviewed me. And she asked, what do we do with our kids as you know, mothers who our kids are traumatized, you know, going through divorce? And I said, you know, right. Yeah. So I said, you know what? What we need to do is give them their feelings and say, hey, you seem really mad right now. What's going on? And then listen. And then listen some more by saying, oh, tell me more about why that made you angry. Mm-hmm. Open-ended questions. And then we listen. And then we say, so, Johnny, it sounds like when I did that, when mommy walked away, you felt kind of betrayed by me. And we name it. We validate it. That gives him permission to feel those feelings.
Right.
And he's sharing them. We're not alone in our feelings. Now Johnny's not isolated in his feelings because humans don't do well when we're feeling them in isolation. What's shareable is bearable. So now I'm naming it. I'm saying, I bet you felt betrayed by me. You know what? I don't blame you at all. That wasn't my intention, but I can see why you felt that way. And guess what? Poof, his feelings are now externalized out of his body and evaporating into the air because they've been shared, they've been validated, they've been named. He was able to really feel and let them go.
Right.
And in all that little interaction, I just taught Johnny, my child, what to do with feelings, not to avoid them. Not to stay on his phone playing games for hours to avoid his feelings or any other distractions or, you know, compulsions. I just taught him that what's shareable is bearable. I just taught him that he matters, that his feelings matter, how good it feels to feel seen and heard and understood by another human.
Right.
That all happened in that one little exchange, and it will stick with him at a subconscious level for the rest of his life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that I ever had an experience of anyone.
No, not with a mom, Katie.
My feelings.
Not with a mom who still can't. It's too painful for her to think that you get depressed in the afternoons as an adult.
Right.
She still can't tolerate that. So she has to shut you down somehow.
Yeah.
So that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
That you were never allowed to feel your feelings as a child or talk about them.
Yeah. I don't remember anyone asking me how I felt like about anything. How when my parents got divorced.
Mm-mm.
I don't remember my dad. I don't remember it being all about his feelings and how the divorce affected him.
Yeah.
And I remember being really angry at him, like, you shouldn't be dumping all this on me. Not appropriate.
Yeah.
But I don't ever remember him asking how I was or my mom. And there was nobody went to counseling. There was no,
yeah,
there was nothing. It was, yeah, just like, stuff it down and move on.
Yeah. So we stuff it down, and those feelings still reside, yeah, in our bodies.
Oh yeah.
Just because they're invisible does not mean they're just as real as anything in the world. And they live in our bodies and they haunt us.
Yeah. Oh, I think you're right.
And they leak into everything else. So, on a, yes, positive note,
yes, please.
Katie's getting in touch with her feelings.
Yeah.
And especially those angry ones.
Yeah. Yikes.
Which means they're coming out of your body. No, don't say yikes.
Good. That is good. Yeah.
I think
it's just that anticipation of pain. It's like when you know you're going to get pricked by a needle, but then it's over and then,
yeah,
it's no big deal, right? It's just, yeah, the fear of it. The fear of the pain almost.
Well, it's you recognizing the anger and channeling it into a boundary.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be painful.
No.
Instead of it stuffing down and creating this ongoing chronic anxiety.
Yeah.
That actually sounds a lot better than.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Much better.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've had a lot to say today. Any famous last words, Katie?
Not today.
No. Okay. Well, thanks for being you. And this was fun.
Yeah. Right back at you.
Okay.